proceed to the second case of the day, the United States versus Pabe. Mr. King.
May it please the court, this is an appeal of convictions of Mr. George Pabe for the offenses in violation of 18 U.S.C. 666, theft of funds from a federally funded program, and 18 U.S.C. 371, conspiracy to commit said offense. In October of 2007, Mr. Pabe, then the mayor of the city of East Chicago, purchased, in conjunction with, on behalf of his daughter, a property, a residential property in the adjoining city of Gary, Indiana, the Miller neighborhood. Thereafter, Mr. Pabe, with longtime friends that predated his election to office, sat and discussed the prospect of remodeling necessary to get the house in livable condition. The evidence was at trial that throughout most of Mr. Pabe's adult life, Mr. Pabe, no handyman himself, would, when needs arose with any of the properties he owned, his friends, including his co-defendant, Jose Camacho, an Angel Acosta, a Benedicto Diaz, and others who did possess the skills, would gather and, without charge to him for their service, but simply seeking reimbursement of materials, would do various and sundry remodeling jobs, ranging from roofs to deck construction to you name it.
Well, he's trying to say that it was all Camacho's deal.
I'm sorry, what now?
What's his name, Camacho?
Jose Camacho, yes.
Yeah, he's, at least it seems that, you pronounce it Pabe or Pabe?
Pabe.
Pabe. Pabe. That he was the guy that knew everything. Well, Pabe's over in Puerto Rico and running the city, I guess.
Yeah, in the period of time shortly after the remodeling began, the unrefuted testimony was Pabe was in Puerto Rico. Camacho undertook, sometime from the purchase in October of 07 into the Christmas season of 07-08, while Pabe was on vacation in Puerto Rico, undertook work on the house, including, on some occasions, bringing employees of the city of East Chicago to perform work on the house, including using city purchase accounts, credit cards, if you will, to purchase various and sundry supplies. During this period of time, there were two different witnesses that testified at trial that Camacho said to them, Mr. Perez and Mr. Vasquez, the mayor does not know what I'm doing. If he did, he would be angry. He would take it out on me. Two separate occasions during that relevant Christmas period of time.
Now, Camacho is jointly tried.
He was.
Yeah, so that's... So, anyway, the witnesses are saying it's his fault, not his, or something like that. Is that what you're...
The witnesses...
Saying?
What those witnesses said were, during that Christmas period of time, when the first evidence of any work being done, that Camacho was expressing to two different people on two different occasions that Pabe knew nothing about what he, Camacho, was doing. That was the evidence in that regard.
But wasn't there also testimony from one of the employees of the city that the mayor was there during what we would consider normal business hours, observing him performing work?
There was, and that was a witness by the last name of Stavojevic.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Stavojevic was a painter for the city. Mr. Stavojevic testified on two occasions. He was at the house in question when then-Mayor Pabe came to the house. He believed one of those 2 days may have been a Saturday. And it's unrefuted that Mayor Pabe knew who he was, knew him to be an employee of the city. Stavojevic had previously, before Pabe was ever mayor of the city of East Chicago, been hired personally, privately, and for direct payment by Pabe to paint his principal residence in East Chicago. So Stavojevic was known to Mayor Pabe not only as an employee and a painter, but someone who had done work for him. On that occasion, when he hired him directly, the evidence is unrefuted, he paid him directly. In this circumstance, Camacho was the one who brought, including Stavojevic, Vasquez, and one or two other gentlemen to the home, including a period of time when the mayor was in Puerto Rico. At the conclusion of all of the evidence, the court proposed the giving of the final instruction, commonly known as the ostrich instruction. Pabe made a timely and, we believe, proper and appropriate objection. We did not believe, and we do not believe on this appeal, that the evidence was sufficient to show and establish requisite finding under a subjective analysis, even looking at the evidence in a light most favorable to the government, that Pabe had the requisite intent of deliberate avoidance. There was no evidence to suggest he took any overt act to deliberately avoid, and we do not believe the evidence was sufficient to show the second category of psychological avoidance.
Wasn't the defense that you argued lack of knowledge?
I'm sorry, what
the
now?
Defense you argued at trial was lack of knowledge.
It was.
Okay.
In
the face of that defense, then, evidence was introduced to try to demonstrate knowledge.
Yes.
Such as the testimony we just discussed, the cell phone records of Mr. Camacho.
Yes.
Calls between he and the mayor during normal business hours, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so if he's claiming I didn't know in the face of all this evidence, why isn't this instruction then raised by the very issue you raised?
Because he claimed he did not know what Camacho was doing in terms of it being illegal. In terms of Camacho being at the house, the evidence was, by government witness Olga Cosme, Camacho's role in the city was on duty 24/7. And there was a dispute. The controller felt that timesheets had to be kept. However, Olga Cosme, who was the actual timekeeper, was acting under direction, not of Pabe, acting under the direction that in Camacho's case, it routinely filled in 8 hours regardless of actual time worked because of Camacho being available and, in fact, being called out at all hours of the day or night, all days of the week.
Was Camacho paid hourly?
Camacho was paid an hourly salary. That is correct, Your Honor. It was not a... Well, that's how he was paid. The point about Camacho being at the property and cell phone records indicating Camacho was in the Miller area doesn't put him right at the house, but it puts him in the Miller area of Gary. That is not dispositive in the least about what Pabe's knowledge of Camacho's locale when he's making a cell phone call to him would be. It's not as though Pabe had some sort of GPS monitoring device on Mr. Camacho.
Mr. King, Pabe paid for some of the items.
Pabe
paid for all of them, did he? But he did not pay for all of them.
Ultimately, he did.
Did he ever question how the other items were being paid for, the big ticket items, while the construction was going on?
There were relatively few big ticket items that he did not pay for. But the testimony was, during the course of this period, as was the practice from before with some of these same individuals, before he was ever mayor, that upon request he would be paying. Almost always in cash by way of reimbursement. We have the testimony of Angela Costa, who received $1,000 at one point and another point $300 or $400. The most telling evidence in this regard was on February 1st of 2008. February 1st, 2008, Camacho has gone out, has used the Menards City account, and purchased slightly in excess of $600, much of it plumbing supplies. We have a check written by Pabe on that same date to Camacho, and it is memoed. This is Exhibit GP12. It is memoed. Reimbursed plumbing supplies in the sum of $600. Now, that's the only check. But again, consistent with what was happening during this period of this event, and historically, because we are talking ultimately, most of the individuals here are longtime friends. Some of them grew up and were born in Puerto Rico and came here. They emigrated together. They lived together. That check is telling in terms of indicating that from Pabe's perspective, and there was, evidence was unrefuted, he is not a gifted handyman. But from his perspective, he was responding to requests being made for reimbursement. And for that reason, we believe, when all is said and done, the government failed to establish that he deliberately avoided, deliberately blinded himself, if you use the subjective test, which this court has on prior occasions, say this is not a reasonable man test. It's subjective. And the evidence in this case, that ostrich instruction should not have been given. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time, if I might, for rebuttal.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. King.
Your Honor.
Mr. Hoar.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning, and may it please the Court. Your Honors, the District Court in this case did not abuse its discretion in any way in giving a conscious avoidance instruction. As this Court has said on many occasions, the instruction is appropriate when two conditions are met. First, the defendant claims a lack of knowledge of a criminal scheme, and second, there is evidence in the record that the defendant deliberately ignored facts that would have revealed the truth. The first prong is conceded by the defendant. And as to the second, Pabe's theory of defense, as Mr. King has here conceded, was that his longtime friend, Jose Camacho, was stealing from the city, but that he, Pabe, lacked knowledge of that fact. In other words, the defendant claims he was associated with criminal conduct, but he did not know of it. And this Court has repeatedly said that that is a paradigmatic case for giving the instruction. Furthermore, there is plenty of evidence on this record from which a reasonable jury could find that Pabe had made a deliberate effort to avoid being confronted with the fact that Camacho was using city funds and workers to improve Pabe's home. Your Honor, the defendant has, Mr. King has come forward here and given you a presentation of the evidence. But as this Court has said as long ago as the Talkington decision in 1989, the Court is not to look at this de novo. The Court is not to look at this in the light most favorable to the defendant. The Court is, when looking at deciding whether an instruction should be given to the jury, to look at it in the evidence essentially in the light most favorable to the government or in the light most favorable to the instruction. And here there was plenty of evidence in the record from which the jury could find that Pepe was avoiding finding out what Camacho was doing. In the first place, Hilda Pepe testified that they would give cash and they would direct Camacho to place all the receipts in a brown envelope on the kitchen counter in the home, and all the receipts were supposed to just pile up in there. They also testified that although the POM project began in November of 2007, and there were pictures in the record showing work being done on the house, including doors, the front door, which was paid for by the city, being built, put in the house in November of 2007, that they did not look at any of these receipts until December of 2008. And so really, whether the jury wanted to find that Pabe was giving any cash at all to Camacho or not, the fact remains that there was supposedly a pile of receipts sitting in an envelope where they could have checked and confirmed and found that there was no receipt for the front door that they had not paid for themselves, for the big bathtub in their main floor that they had not paid for the bar in the basement that they had not paid for, and for all of the other items in the home that they had not paid for. But for some reason, they studiously avoided looking in the envelope at all. The jury, if it wanted to, could find that that was mere negligence on the part of the defendant and acquit him. Or they could look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the government and find that the defendant was consciously avoiding that because he knew what he would discover if he found, which is that he was receiving benefits from city money.
Well, they were tried jointly, Camacho and Pabe.
They were, Your Honor.
So I assume there's plenty of evidence going in against Camacho as well.
Your Honor, Camacho all but conceded that he was guilty of the offense, and Pabe at trial essentially said, convict Camacho of this offense, but I didn't know anything about it. I mean, there's overwhelming evidence that Camacho went to Menards and bought all of these items, that Camacho was working on city time, that Camacho was in the Miller neighborhood of Gary, which is 10, 12 miles away from the city limits of East Chicago. It's not, it borders Porter County. It doesn't border East Chicago.
Well, for example, where he was talking about the whatever amount of money it was where he gave him a check that was similar, slightly less than whatever was charged on the city account.
Well, there's one.
You mentioned that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was there some follow-up to that that showed Camacho did or did not reimburse the city?
I mean, there's no evidence that Camacho ever reimbursed the city for anything.
All right. Well, because that's what was it? What did you say? $600 or something?
There was a purchase of a host of plumbing supplies. I mean, they redid two whole bathrooms in the house.
But Mr. Kinger said that he gave him a $600 check, almost concurrent with that purchase. I just wondered where that went as far as Camacho was concerned.
I don't know that there was any follow-up for that. It's not clear whether that $600 was designed for the plumbing supplies that were paid by the city, or there were supplies that were paid for by the defendant. The defendant had an account at one of the hardware stores, and there was evidence that Diaz, another witness, made purchases on that account. So they did pay for some things from their house. Mr. Bay did pay for some things, but there were $14,000 worth of items at least that were paid for by the city. So the fact that there's one $600 check doesn't mean that the jury couldn't still infer from this instruction, the appropriateness of this particular instruction. That doesn't in any way overcome the weight of the evidence.
Well, they were trying to join. That's just sort of I know there was a severance issue, and that isn't before us, but I just was curious that because I assume there, unless he basically confessed, which he did not do, Camacho, I mean.
He did not confess, Your Honor, but he did not really mount much of a defense. He was charged with some witness tampering counts as well. He fought those, and he was acquitted of those, but he was convicted of the substantive offenses, and he chose not to appeal. So, I mean, I don't know.
That answered the question.
Yeah.
I'm just curious about this mix, but because it. If they didn't really push on that, he's basically throwing in the towel on what he did. Then
he pretty much was.
I want to make sure I understood your comment. There was $14,000 in items charged to the city of East Chicago that were not reimbursed.
No, the total loss, I'm sorry, Your Honor, was $14,000. I believe the total amount of items that were charged was somewhere in the neighborhood of $7,000 or $8,000.
Okay.
The rest of that loss amount was the 42 city days of work that were put in by the workers. That's all. The exact breakdown of that is contained in the pre-sentence report. But I remember that the total was around 14, and it was roughly half and half between items and city work time. And turning to the city worker as well, Stoya Novakovic testified that on two or three different occasions, at most one of which was on a weekend, he was in the home painting, as he did on at least 20 days, and the mayor came by, the mayor inspected the work, the mayor said hello. The mayor knows who he is. The mayor didn't say anything about why are you in the house. The mayor didn't ask any questions about are you being paid for this. In terms of Mr. King's comment that, well, you know, he assumed that Camacho was paying Novakovic and didn't worry about it, that takes the evidence in the light most favorable to the defendant. It doesn't take the evidence in the light most favorable to the government. And frankly, the evidence in this case was that Novakovic had previously painted the mayor's house in 2005 after he became mayor. That's on page 491 of the trial transcript. And on that particular occasion, he had submitted an itemized billing, and he was paid $1,500 in cash for it by the mayor. So the fact that in this particular instance the mayor didn't pay him is, frankly, quite suspicious and shows an alteration of behavior, which, again, is a paradigmatic example for the ostrich instruction. Furthermore, when Hilda Pabe testified, she was asked directly by Mr. King on page 715 on these past projects, did you pay cash? Did you use checks? Combination? And she answered, that I don't recall, but usually I used my credit card and checks. In this instance, according to the defendant, supposedly they usually paid cash. And that's, again, an alteration of behavior that would not leave a paper trail and that would be symptomatic of a change in behavior where an ostrich instruction is appropriate. So taking the evidence in the light most favorable to the government, which is what you have to do, there was certainly no abuse of discretion in Judge Moody's decision to find that an ostrich instruction was appropriate and warranted in this case.
Mr. Holler, for all the city workers, members of the engineering department,
There was one city worker, Mr. Acosta, who was a member of the wastewater department. He claimed that he was a manager and he only worked on weekends or that he took compensatory time. All of the workers that were at issue in this case, where we felt that they were working on city time and that they were charging their time to the city, were people who were subordinates of Camacho. They were maintenance workers.
In the engineering department?
Yes, Your Honor.
Does the record reflect how big that workforce is, that whole department?
Mm-hmm. I believe it does. I believe there was testimony from whoever the first worker who was who testified, either Mr. Vasquez or Mr. Santos. I think there are approximately 20 workers in that department, but I'm not sure. I know there were three supervisors, and they each supervised about five or six people. So that's about how many workers there were. There were only a few workers who were there all the time, Camacho principally, as well as Novakovic. Others were only there for a few projects. But one of them, for example, Mr. Bittner, and this again goes to the ostrich instruction. Mr. Bittner testified that he came over after hours. He left work and was, you know, told to go over and work on the air conditioner and do a repair project. He went over there. He worked for an hour. He socialized for an hour with the mayor, and the mayor offered to pay him. And he said, no, you know, I'd only worked for an hour. You don't need to pay me. But again, the mayor is offering to pay for this work, just like the mayor offered to pay for Novakovic's work in 2005. And yet when Novakovic is painting and working in the house in February or March of 2008, during working hours between 7 and 3, he's not offering to pay him, and he's not asking him, are you taking comp time? And he's not asking any of those questions. And that's an alteration of behavior which the jury could look at and could infer that that he's being an ostrich.
In fact, whether the mayor's office is in any how close is the mayor's office to the engineering department physically in East Chicago?
They're a few blocks away from each other. One's on Railroad Road and the other one's on the Main Street. I think it's Chicago Avenue. They're located in very close proximity to one another. And the cell phone calls, again, are yet another example of that. They talked 186 times between the mayor's cell phone and Camacho's phone in a five-month period during which, and in each of those occasions, Camacho is in Miller. Now, Miller is miles away from the engineering department. It's miles away from the city limit of East Chicago. There's no reason for Camacho to be there. And this isn't, we're not saying that, you know, the mayor should be asking Camacho where he is every occasion, but for them to talk 186 times and for the mayor never to ask, so where are you today? What's going on? Mm-hmm. And never to question why Camacho is in Miller so often during working hours, this case, Your Honors, is well within the realm of when an ostrich instruction could be given.
I'm going to follow up again on my earlier question. So now, how much in value was there of work done on the house charged to the city for which there was no evidence of either reimbursement or an offer of reimbursement?
Approximately $6,000 to $7,000.
Okay.
Somewhere in that neighborhood. And then again, somewhere between $6,000 and $8,000 was physical labor, and somewhere between $6,000 and $8,000 was the items that were charged to Menards. And there are detailed exhibits in the record, Your Honor, that shows every item, mm-hmm. including the items that Hilda Pabe said that she purchased, where there were receipts and evidence showing that she didn't purchase those items, that those were purchased by Camacho. We went through essentially with two different witnesses, a witness from Menards and an FBI agent, reviewing each one of those items, and those were all admitted into evidence in the record. So the fact that there's one $600 check or the fact that there's some amount of cash is going is again, does nothing to overcome the overwhelming strength of the evidence and justification for giving the ostrich instruction. I know that Mr. Pabe did not touch in his reply brief for his argument here on any of the sentencing issues. We believe those are adequately explained in the brief as well, that there was no error.
One question on that.
Yes.
That was the one I wanted to ask, and that was on the manager or organizer. I assume these employees who are credited against him as far as their work, are they considered part of the ones he was controlling or managing or whatever?
Yes, Your Honor. Our position and what the district court found in his findings, which were not clear error, was that Camacho was recruited, managed, supervised, and directed in his work by Pabe, and that these other workers who were all brought to the house repeatedly by Camacho were under him. And so through that chain, therefore, Pabe was the organizer or leader and supervisor of all of those workers who were being brought to the house. So we feel that clearly there were five or more workers involved. And frankly, even if there weren't involved, we also argued in the district court that this was an otherwise extensive scheme because all of those workers plus a couple of others who were not working on city time were all taking all of the supplies that had been purchased and were putting them into the house. This was an extensive scheme. It lasted 5 months. The repairs began in November of 2007 and wrapped up sometime in April of 2008. Thousands and thousands of dollars of work were done to improve this home that wasn't even in the city limits of East Chicago. We believe that enhancement was plainly appropriate, as was the obstruction enhancement and the abuse of trust enhancement. And the district court's decision after imposing those enhancements to then impose the sentence that it did was well justified by its extensive factual findings about the pervasive corruption and the importance in sending a message in deterring this kind of conduct in the future. For all those reasons, we believe that the judgment of the district court as well as its sentence should be affirmed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Holler. Mr. King.
The government relied on its brief and iterates here that under U.S. versus Garcia and Herrera, the suggestion that the simple showing of a defendant admitting or otherwise being shown to be in association with someone denying knowledge of the activity, the wrongful activity, meets the test for the giving of the ostrich instruction, omits the portion of those opinions that say, despite circumstantial evidence to the contrary. The circumstantial evidence to the contrary must then meet the test this circuit has established. And view the evidence in a light most favorable to the government. It still must establish, subjectively as to Mr. Pabe, that he engaged in deliberate avoidance, psychological avoidance, as has been coined by this circuit. That is where the district court, with all due respect, was wrong in his decision that the evidence warranted the instruction. He started with, there was testimony that George Pabe was a hands-on mayor. The same sort of argument was used by the district judge in terms of justifying some of the enhancements that we articulate and address in our brief on the sentencing issue. The de jure position of mayor does not, for purposes of either of our arguments, clear the bar for the government in terms of what they must show. And we have the danger in this ostrich instruction issue of, by giving that instruction in the wrong circumstances, we permit proof of negligence to constitute proof of intent.
Mr. King, you relied earlier in your argument on the fact that these are longtime friends in many cases. And I understand that position, I believe. Well, what are we to make of the fact that this is the mayor and these are municipal employees that are engaged? Is that amount to anything?
In some cases...
No, you say the district court may have put too much emphasis on it, but in regard to what one would think about a mayor of a community of this size seeing municipal workers regularly attending to repairs, are we to look mostly to the friendship of the pre-mayor days, or are we not to look at the fact he's the mayor?
Well, actually, I think what we have in this case is examples. We have a couple different examples on this employment. Remember, in terms of city employees there that he sees, Camacho he sees. At some point or another, he sees Camacho there. That's the good friend. That's the age-old friend. Camacho, from the mayor's perspective, is 24/7. He is not tied to a particular series of days, work days during the week. He's not a Monday through Friday, 9-to-5 guy. The other one, the painter, Stoyan, in his circumstance, it's one day based on the evidence, that is not a Saturday. We have that one day. He is not a social friend, based on the record. His previous experience with him when he hired him directly paid out of his pocket. So in many of the other cases when other city workers were there, there is absolutely no evidence that Pabe was there or had any inkling that any of those individuals were there. So I think we have to kind of break it down. And it's a difference with a distinction, or distinction with a difference, when it comes to Camacho. Camacho, by the way, the record that my colleague alluded to in terms of purchases included a lot of purchases from Menards that not only didn't end up in Pabe's house, they didn't end up in any facility, based on the evidence that I've ever seen, anywhere in the city of East Chicago.
Could you please address, your time is up, but I wanted to ask you to address the evidence pointed to by the government about the envelope with the receipts and the apparent lengthy delay in examining what was in there and how that pertains to this instruction.
And here's how it pertains to it in terms of it not being studious avoidance by Mr. Pabe. First of all, there was testimony that in the past, in terms of the handling of receipts and dispersal, that Hilda, his wife, as opposed to him, was much more involved. During this period of time, the period of time we're talking about with the envelope and the receipts, the evidence is, and it's unrefuted, Mrs. Pabe was going through the significant illness and ultimate death, I believe, of her brother. He was on the last legs of a battle with cancer. And so her physical presence during this period of time, as well as her focus and concentration on what was happening at this house, at this property, were certainly compromised as a result. So that is how I address that concern of Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. King.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Holler. The case is taken under advisement.